This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast, and we're coming to you, on the eve of the match against Burnley, which is a very big game, as Brentford are going into this game, looking to try and get 3 points if we can, but for me, at least we must not lose. We've had a bit of a week. I'm sitting in the virtual joint with Lady. Lady, how are you?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, bracing myself for a long journey up north tomorrow. So, as you say, yeah, a very big game indeed. Lots to talk about that. But apart from that, I'm all good.
That's good. So, listen, tell you something. Let's just have a little, before we start going into the nuts and bolts of the game against Arsenal last week, which we lost. There's an argument to say that we expected to lose against Arsenal, but I think in the end, people actually went away from that game a little bit gutted that we did lose it, because we could have got something out of it as well. But before that, Ivan Tony, who everyone keeps talking about the Ivan Tony show, because Ivan Tony seems to get quite a lot of plaudits here and there and everywhere. It's almost like it's raised his profile. The gambling exploits that he's had has raised his profile massively. And the irony is that he's actually been picked for England now, when he's come back and he's playing for Brentford. And there's some people that's arguing, saying that he's actually not playing as well for Brentford as he was before he actually got the gambling ban. But then he's gone straight into Gareth Southgate's side, straight to the England side for the games against Brazil and Belgium. Can only be a good thing for Tony and a good thing for Brentford, I'd say, unless he gets injured. Laney.
Yeah, of course, if he gets injured, which we're getting quite used to, you know. But you know, it can never not be a good thing to have a Brentford player picked for three lines duty. I mean, it's just a massively proud moment for us English Brentford fans. You know, obviously they're Brentford players for Scotland and Wales and Ireland and, you know, countries all the way around the world these days. But as an English Brentford fan, to see a Brentford player pull on the three lines and possibly, you know, cement his place or further underpin his place to go to the Euros this summer, then, you know, it's a huge deal. You know, I actually can't believe that Ivan Tony's become as marmite amongst some Brentford fans as he's become. Is kind of, you know, but some people on our Twitter feed have said, don't want to see him in an England shirt. I don't even want to see him in a Brentford shirt. And I'm like, okay, everything all right with you? He's probably our most successful, probably is our best ever player to play for Brentford in a Brentford shirt, the most prolific goal scorer in anyone's lifetime, just the most prolific, excellent striker. Of course there's demons, and we're aware of those, and it's about managing him until we get to the summer and where he's probably likely to move on. So, yeah, it's, as I said, you know, when Southgate names his teams, or his names his squads, you're never quite sure what you're going to get. Form seems to go out the window. So I don't think he's being picked on current form where he was in the past. I think he's being picked to see if he's lost it, or see whether he really, it's another chance to bring him into the fold to have a good kind of close up look at him. But the chance he had against Arsenal, where he tried to lob Ramsdale, it showed the instincts are still there. It shows the way he celebrated, the equaliser. It shows his heart's still there. I agree, it's not quite clicking, but he scored four goals since he's been back. And, I've said in the podcast before, and I'll underline it again, the goals he's scored so far will probably keep us up already. Yes, we need more points, but those goals at Wolves and the goal against Nottingham Forest, they were critical. So, I look forward to seeing him hopefully running around with the three lines on his chest again.
That's right. And I'll be there at the game as well, which I'm looking forward to. Got all the characters coming down as well. The Blades are down. Spanish Dave, of course, he's down there as well. And Bella might make a rare appearance, go to a football match as well, which is all good. But I'm just going to say, you talked about, because I thought about that Ivan Toney chance against Arsenal. And I'm always sort of thinking, maybe that was the move that sealed it. Because, that was an incredible. The instinct and the fact that it was so close from being a goal. And it was so well taken, and it was very, very clever indeed. And I think that, maybe Southgate's turned around and goes, I haven't got anybody else that really does this for the side, and I need a bit of difference. And a lot of people are going on about Solanke. All the Bournemouth fans are crying that Solanke's not in. They're talking about whoever else may, who should be in his place instead. But the Solanke one is all really kicking off quite massively. And I think that maybe it's for Southgate. He's going, look, I can't take the same off. I've got to take someone who offers something a little bit different.
Yeah, he does. He offers a lot different. And we know his flexibility. And, he'll step up to the plate. And I'm sure he will impress. Anyone that's seen him over the last 3 or 4 years knows what he's capable of. And we've been big champions of him. We were kind of questioning why he wasn't included in the England squads in the past. So we can't be surprised, really, that he's included in this one. I think he's earned that right. It's a shame Rico's not around, because I think, over the season, hopefully he would have been in a similar position. Knocking on the door. He was knocking on the door so loudly. He was using the sledgehammer, wasn't he? And he was still ignored. So, So back to Ivan. I think Ollie Watkins looks like he got a knee injury last night in the Aston Villa game against Ajax. So I would imagine that if he hasn't already withdrawn from the England squad, he certainly won't be playing in Villa's game this weekend against West Ham. So I think he'll be out, which, gives Ivan probably more of a chance of getting, proper minutes, whether it's a start or not, or coming off the subs bench, we'll see. But it's, as I said, how can it not be a positive thing that Brentford players playing for England?
Yes, and talking about Solanke, talking about Bournemouth, talking about that amazing Bournemouth versus Luton match as well, with Bournemouth in the doldrums at half-time. Luton were 3-0 up at half-time. I watched the match itself, and at 3-0 at half-time, I actually kind of sort of, I kind of went off into the next room and sort of just decided to watch something else, I think. The next minute, I come back in, and it's like, oh no, Bournemouth are 3-2, so I kind of watched the sort of final 20 minutes, and it was pretty amazing game. But I think also what this does is, because the fact is that there was enormous emotions went down with Brentford fans during that match. One minute, everyone is like, we're going to get relegated. Oh, no. Then it's like, oh, yeah, everything's all brilliant. And I just think that that game probably sums up where we are in the relegation sort of kind of zone. We're a team like Luton. Yeah, they battle and everything like that. But the fact that they give, they go from 3-0 up to 4-3 down kind of sums up the position to teams like that. And that's why, and I keep saying it, that we have to remember, if a team goes on a run, right, if Sheffield United or Luton or Burnley, they go on a run, they deserve to stay up. But it just, in all the years, it's never happened. So if it happens this year, fair play, you've got to put your hand up. But for Brentford fans, that was a relaxed moment for them, wasn't it, when we saw that Bournemouth goal go in?
Yeah, it was an incredible match. And, as you say, even when they play really well, they still lose. And that's not to say they, you know, they'll continue doing that. They're obviously, there's a lot about them, and it's kind of like in any other year you'd want them to survive probably, but not the certainly not at the expense of us. And you also got to remember, I mean, I kind of, you know, I not more than kind of agree. I definitely agree with you. I mean, this season is a write off. You know, it's a car crash of a season, you know, in terms of the, you know, comparatively to the last two, you know, the injuries and Ivan's ban, we've talked about it time and time again. You can't ignore all of that and expect Brentford to be as successful as they were the last 2 years. And, you know, we can talk about transfer dealings and deadline days and, you know, are we strong enough? We can talk about all that. But once you've taken into, you know, what we can achieve with what's left, for us to keep our head above water is the only thing that really matters this year. And that's why, you know, I did note, you know, the wins against Nottingham Forest and the win against Wolves were critical. Take points out of those two games, we're in squeaky bum time. And it shows you, you know, we've got games against Luton coming up, we've got games against Sheffield United coming up, and obviously we've got the biggie against Burnley tomorrow. You know, you can argue, and I know people are going to go, oh, steady on, but, you know, you can say we win tomorrow, we're safe. I'd probably go as far as to say that in all reality, when you realise, you know, obviously not mathematically, I mean, that goes without saying. I'm not saying we're mathematically safe. I'm just saying, like, realistically we're safe. But I'm not looking at those bottom three and thinking it's going to be much change there, to be honest. And, you know, we're going to be all right. And yeah, we obviously always love things to be different, but as things are, I see enough about us. You know, the game against Arsenal last Saturday, once again it showed you that we go to one of the best teams, or if not the form team in the Premier League at the moment, and we don't get humiliated where a lot of other teams do. There's enough about us. We're intelligent. There's enough spirit. We create chances. We could have gone ahead in that game. You know, could have, should have gone ahead in that game. Collins' header, Ramsdale pulled out a great save. You know, people slagging off Ramsdale for dithering, but I give credit to Wiese for chasing that ball down. We're looking for the negatives in our own team when there remains a lot of positives. Call me happy clappy. I'm happy to take that. But I'm a kind of a realist based on years of experience of seeing what happens with, you know, the teams at the bottom of the division. As you say, Bill, one of them has to go on an almighty run. And if they do that, then good luck to them. But there's still the points deductions to come. And I don't want to rely on them, but they're still there. You can't ignore that either.
I'm not, and again, for me, I'm not even putting the point deductions into place, because as far as I'm concerned...
I
mean,
I know you're not, but you have to, you know.
But the reason why is ifs and buts, and you don't know what it is. So I'd rather think about just getting the points and doing things off your own back rather than relying on a points deduction, because, you know, I'm not being funny. If the points deduction comes in, we're safe, and one of them teams is down. That's a fact. So yeah, it's almost like we don't need to talk...
I was going to agree. I 100% agree. That's why that points deduction thing needs to happen as quickly as possible, right? In the clarity, because chances are we're safe already. And how different does that make everyone's mojo? The vibe around the place, we're looking forward to next season. The stress, the inter-fan bickering that goes on with, you know, pointing fingers at the medical staff for screwing up all the injuries, supposedly, you know, Ivan Toney's form, supposedly, all that kind of, like, you know, some of it is, you know, it's inevitable when once you've got this kind of magnitude of relegation hanging over us. And if we haven't, we can then just all chill out and look forward to next year.
That's right. Okay, so talking about transfers, were we talking about transfers? Maybe we weren't talking about transfers.
Let's talk about them anyway.
We've had a transfer. Looks like we've got a transfer going out from Brentford, actually. And it's not a pitch side transfer. It's a backroom transfer as well. Bernardo Cueva, who is our set piece expert as well. It looks like Chelsea have looked at us and thought, Brentford, they're quite good at set pieces. Let's nab their set piece expert. So they've nabbed him. And he's going to go off to Chelsea. And it's interesting because I saw somewhere on a very respectable site that Brentford were actually rated as, I think, one of the top three, if not the best set piece team in Europe, not even the UK, but in Europe as well. So I think that may have gone way ahead to actually getting Bernardo Cueva his job at Chelsea. And so highly rated is he, we actually kind of put a clause in his contract from what I can gather. And the rumour is that, you know, we're going to get paid £1 million for him going to Chelsea, which is quite bizarre, isn't it, lady?
Yeah, it's a lot of money. But then we're going to have to go and find a replacement, and we're going to have to probably prize them away from, you know, wherever they are. So it might cost us a similar amount of money. So, you know, we know the prices that are involved in running a Premier League football club, and, you know, all the overheads and the wages that are involved to get the kind of staff that we need to push us on. Yeah, you know, he's only 36 years of age. So he's, you know, he's a youngster as well. It'd be interesting to see who we've got lined up, because I'm sure that this doesn't really come as a massive surprise. These, you know, the rumour mill within the industry will be that, you know, he will be, you know, Cueva would have been a hot property, and they would have been looking for a replacement. So I kind of would expect kind of movement quite quickly on a replacement, certainly by the end of the season. But £1 million, not to be sniffed at, Mr. Grant.
No, I've got to ask this question. If Brentford were, and I know this is a real sort of hypothetical question, if Brentford were Arsenal or Man United, right, and Cueva was our set piece coach, then would he then move to Chelsea?
Maybe not. Yeah, I just think the money that Chelsea will be paying him is you know it's you know, it's intergenerational wealth, isn't it, really? You know, he's going to earn millions of pounds there. Not to say he won't earn good money at Brentford, but I'm sure he can demand, you know, colossal money there. And, you know, you'd be crazy not to think about it. You know, whether you cross over, I think anyone's career, you know, Chelsea can't be this shit forever, can they? You know, I assume that he goes there thinking he can make a big difference as well. So, you know, I back him, and I'm sure he backs himself. So, yeah, you know, good luck to him. You know, we've certainly, especially last season, we've benefited, and we have got a reputation for sure of, you know, what we do with dead balls and our set pieces. So, you know, he's earned the right to be in contention for jobs like that. And as I said, it's interesting to see what we do next.
And do you think when he goes to Chelsea, obviously because he's seen the inner workings of our side, he's going to say, oi, Chelsea, right, for my set pieces, absolutely brilliant, Ivan Toney, you need to get him in. Do you think that might be a word?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've seen that at Arsenal, haven't we? You know, where David Raya became, you know, a must purchase goalkeeper after, you know, after some of our coaching staff made that transfer over to Arsenal. I think Ivan Toney is, and you know, is central to a lot of those successful knock-ons and the plays. You know, the kind of the patterns of play that they look at when they're learning new set piece drills. His leap for someone who's not huge is great. So yeah, no, it will be interesting to see if Chelsea start coming in for players like him, and I'm sure there's others. Maybe they look at Norgaard for his new long throws.
Yes, indeed. So anyway, listen, just quickly, if you check out prideofwest.london, on the pre-Arsenal podcast, you saw we talked about VAR. We took a little snippet of that little chat, but then we talked about it in full in a podcast on its own on prideofwest.london. Basically, I went down to the Premier League and I discussed VAR with the Premier League top bods and also a load of fans, one fan from each club as well. But there are two fans for Brentford because we're just massive, like I'm saying. Ooh. So Ben Bland and myself are down there, which is all good. And we talked about VAR, and there's a number of things we talked about, really, really interesting, about the potential changes in VAR, what we like, what we don't like. We put forward a load of recommendations. They told us a number of things, some of them we can't discuss on this podcast. But, you know, as we said, it's pub chat. So if you ever see me down the pub, I could talk to you all about that stuff. But in general, it was the fact that we've got a few new things coming in, including the announcement of decisions by the referee. We got the audio coming. It looks like the audio is also being given a big thumbs up because people are saying in the stadium, we've got no idea what's going on half the time. And that's That's part of frustration. But also one of the things that we're trying to do is trying to get the timings down. So trying to not increase the timings, but decrease the timings. So one of the things we said is that we don't want more VAR decisions. We'd like less, if anything, or keep it the same, keep the levels the same, and try and reduce the decisions so that we can actually make decisions a lot quicker. So you should definitely check that out on prideofwest.london. It invoked quite a protracted conversation on Facebook, actually, between different characters who didn't quite get the idea that we were actually talking about the changing of VAR, but they got into a bit of an argument about Havertz and the potential red card that he could have got. And the argument that I had is that at the moment, if you don't know, VAR doesn't give yellow cards. It doesn't check for yellow cards. It only checks for particular things. I'll have to remember it in a minute, but which are goals, which are dangerous play, which are mistaken identity, I think it is, and there's one other thing as well, I can't remember, penalties, okay? So it doesn't check for yellow cards, and Havertz, obviously, we thought it was a penalty when he dived, so it's a penalty, so VAR checked for the penalty, and obviously when he checked for the penalty, you saw that Havertz dived. Now, because he dived and VAR checked it, the referee didn't give it, VAR could not recommend that he gets a yellow card, because that's not what it does. And all I just flagged up, I said, well, maybe, you know, they should do, because they're making the check anyway, it's going to take any longer, and if players are cheating, then they should get called out, maybe they might stop cheating if they know that they may get caught out on a VAR check. So, but that created a whole next conversation. But the VAR conversation was good, interesting, wasn't it, Laney?
Yeah, no, I enjoyed it. Yeah. It was nice listening to it separately as well. So I know we talked about it at the time and chopped it out to do a separate one. But yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, as I said in the piece, it was you know, it's good that they're consulting fans. That can't ever be a bad thing. Hopefully they'll take it on board and you're not paying lip service to them. But it's an evolving technology, isn't it? And I don't think necessarily people will agree and disagree with me. I don't think it's necessarily been awful for the game. I just think some of the implementation has been awful. But hopefully, you know, year on year, they'll fine tune it. So we get to a situation where it actually kind of 100% or 99% gets the right decisions made, but doesn't hold the game up. And, you know, the communication in the stadium, I think, you know, that's critical, because if you're sat at home, you know more about what's going on than you do if you're in the stadium. And I think that some of that is inevitable, because obviously you've got commentators and you've got all that information, but you shouldn't be looking at each other going, what the hell's going on? You know, we're lucky where we sit, we can actually see the big screen and it kind of comes up VAR check or whatever. But some people in other stadiums, they've got no idea what's going on. And, you know, it is as a match going fan, I think, you know, I shouldn't feel like I'm, you know, second class and just kind of like just got, you know, blinkers on, not knowing what the hell's going on.
And finally, for the Americans out there, and you know, we've got a lot of Americans that listen to this podcast as well, very much appreciate your input and you supporting us as well. Like I said to you, some of you maybe only started listening a year ago or 2 years ago, but you love the knowledge of the Brentford history. And it just happens by coincidence, all right, because I'm going to be out in the States there visiting my family. And I thought, I'm going to pop up to Nashville, where we got the Fan Fest on the 6th, I think it is 6th and 7th of April. As well, so the 6th and 7th of April, we've got the Fan Fest where basically all the Premier League clubs are coming together in Nashville. Brentford are going out there as well, and I'm in the zone, and I thought might as well pop up to Nashville with the Tallahassee Bee and to go meet the Nashville Bee and all sorts of characters out there as well, and the Bees. So like I said to you, if you are in the zone, in the Nashville zone for the Fan Fest, definitely check us out, because we're going to be there for the whole weekend, so that should be quite interesting, like I say, in it, Laney?
Yeah. You know, I there's a chance I might be joining you, but we'll have to see if a couple of other business things sort themselves out. But yeah, it'd be nice to stop. I've been chatting with Paul Buckle recently. He's just written the foreword to my next Brentford book, which I shall be kind of doing the pre-sales of in the next month or two. So yeah, keep your eyes out for that. We had such a good time in the summer, traveling driving around, you know, just sampling America and meeting so many friendly Brentford fans of, you know, all eras, ages and nationalities. And you kind of do realise where Brentford are now, and how Premier League has catapulted us. And really that Arsenal game, the first ever Arsenal game, has, you know, transformed Brentford Football Club. And my son is out in Thailand at the moment, and he was out, he's doing a marathon next month, and he was doing some out running in the, literally in the middle of nowhere. He's come out of his Airbnb and there's a random Thai bloke walking down the road, like in the middle of nowhere, not even in a town, with a Brentford shirt on. And it's kind of going, what the fuck? What the hell? So yeah, we're on a different level to where we were at of even 4 years ago. So bonkers, mate.
Bonkers. And I tell you something, just one last thing I want to say. I keep saying one last thing. 10 years ago today, personally, I think something happened which completely changed our club. So it's 10 years ago today, we had that trip to Leighton Orient where Trotter scored in that 1-0 win. And that basically set us up for promotion from Division One to the Championship. And it was a brilliant day out. We did boats down the river. They gave us the whole of one side. So basically, Brentford fans took over just one side of the stadium, in an away stadium, which is like unheard of. Like normally we just have a little corner. But they realised that they could sell loads of tickets, so they just gave us the whole side, which was ridiculous because they were still within the promotion battle themselves. So they kind of did themselves no justice whatsoever. We took over that side and we absolutely roared the team on to that 1-0 victory. And Trotter, who, you know, a lot of people are not happy with him, but I'm cool with him. He scored a goal, which is a great goal, and set us up 1-0 win. And from there on in, Brentford, next level. You remember that game, didn't you, lady?
Yeah, it was incredible. When you said 10 years ago today that something happened that transformed our football club, I thought, Javi Venta. Was it Javi Venta? We signed him 10 years ago today. Was it? Yeah. Was it not him?
Yeah.
It was a great, great day out, yeah. And as you said, you know, it was one of those moments where you kind of started to realise that the earth was kind of moving, and Brentford...
The earth was round, yeah?
Is it? I don't think so, mate. Well, I'll save that for another day. Well, I've heard it isn't. But yeah, so yeah, a great goal and great video. We shot some brilliant video of that, which is on our YouTube channel. It's worth going to look that out. Well, actually, I might try and dig it out and repost it. Repost the video. Let's do that later on.
Yeah, that's, as I said to you, we started 1992 on YouTube. Like I said to you, we don't do as many videos now as we did then, but we used to do one every single week. And like I said to you, for you fans who like the history, just go back and you can check through all our Division One and our Championship history, because we used to shoot a video every single game and we got it all in there. But check out the Orient one, because it's brilliant. We got it sailing down the river on the boat, you know, all the way down to Greenwich, and then the game itself. And it was just, honestly, it was those days, mate, it was absolutely brilliant. But anyway, we got to talk about a couple of other games as well. We've got the Arsenal and we've got the Burnley coming up. Let's go to just quickly talk about the Arsenal game. Saturday, Arsenal. I don't normally get gutted, and I don't think I've been more gutted than I was at Saturday, because I was actually quite proud by the way that the team performed on Saturday. We could have got something out of that game, but it's just didn't quite happen. And there's some people that argue to say that Arsenal should have been clear before that, but that's not really the point, because that's not how football works, is that they weren't clear and we were 3 minutes away from a draw in that game. And unfortunately it was the same old, which kind of unpicked us, wasn't it, Laney?
Yeah, I stood next to you. Mark Chapman was behind us. We're having a good chat with him, and we were kind of, like we do, obviously counting the clock down, counting the minutes down. It was, you know, it would have been a great point. We'd done really well to keep them at bay. And I just said, I can feel a one big roar coming, whether it's going to be ours or theirs. And it was obviously probably more likely to be theirs. And that's what happened. And sod's law, it was Havertz who shouldn't have been on the pitch. It was a good header, good cross. Flecken almost, he did get a hand to it, but, you know, his balance was moving to the other side, so he couldn't put any weight behind it. It was kind of just pushed it into the roof of the net, really. So, yeah, galling. Didn't feel like a crushing defeat in terms of like numbers. Like we didn't get, you know, 5-0, 6-0. Like I thought, you know, I said before the game, I think we were going to lose heavily. But once again, we used our tactical nous, and Thomas Frank, he did us proud, really, to kind of keep organised and tight with a defence that, you know, on paper you'd think we didn't really stand a chance against them. So, you know, the players have done us proud. Yeah, it's another defeat. Yeah, you know, plucky defeat, blah blah, some people say. But you have to take stock from that. You know, Arsenal are probably going to be, you know, Champions League finalists as well, or at least semi-finalists, and they're going to take the you know, the Premier League title fight right to the end. So to come up against a team like that with our injury crisis and on current form, you fear the worst. And we walked out of that stadium, heads held pretty high, I'd be honest with you. I didn't feel like, yeah, I didn't feel humiliated, and that's probably all we could really hope for going into it.
Yeah, so let's listen to what the fans had to say, both the Brentford fans and the Arsenal fans, after the game, literally straight after the game, in the stands and also in the pub.
Yeah, very close. A bit more confidence, a bit more composure. We don't lose that game. You know, we had two good chances second half. Visser did very well, but that guy, you can't blame Ramsdale, he closed him down. He did very well. But a bit more composure. But like you say, really a reserve side almost, and we're still competing.
Yeah, it's one of those games, isn't it? The longer it goes on, the longer you think you're going to get something out of this game. I think, as you said, it's not that you come to a place like this and off the bat think we've got a genuine chance, but when you're playing like that, we play so good in the second half. Said Tony had a really good chance. And you start really believing. But to be honest, I'm really just proud of the boys. We didn't fold 5 minutes in. You think of these lower league teams sitting below us. Arsenal are walking all over everybody. Their goal difference is ridiculous. And that's because these teams aren't been able to cope. But we actually put up a really good fight today, and we played really well.
I don't know, we weren't at our best, but I mean, I think Arsenal were there for the taking, actually. No, we did really well, yeah. We won't go down, we're safe.
I thought we were in for something at the end of the day. I really did think we were in for something. What was it, 85 minutes? At the end of the day, I think the referee, was he scared? Yeah, we'll look back, we'll review on that.
All scared, aren't they?
Always scared, Bill, always scared. It is what it is. You can probably hear it in my voice. I'm just exasperated. Like Man City, I thought we were going to get away with something again today. Yeah, we didn't have a big expectation, I'll be honest myself. That's my own personal opinion. But we didn't deliver. We didn't get it, and that's the reality of life.
I just thought it's such a shame. I thought we played really, really well. I thought, okay, Flecken took a little bit of flack, but I thought we did really, really well. 2-1 against the Arsenal isn't bad at all, but hey-ho, we go home slightly disappointed today.
We were expecting to get a good hiding. and I think you have to take into account the two brilliant saves of Ramsdale in the second half. So if he hadn't have saved either of those, no, they may have hit the bar, but then they may have gone under the bar. And then what?
You've got to give Brentford credit for that game, because we ain't never got smashed 6. We never got smashed 5 like they were all going to say we was. There was a lot of fight in that. A lot of fight in that performance, and a lot of, you know, a lot of hard work went into that performance. We obviously, no Reguilón today. I don't know what's happening with injury-wise or whatever. So again, we was another defender down. Tony never got absolutely anything today. He's had his shirt pulled left, right and centre, over his head, all sorts. We never got the run of the play in that respect. But as I said, I want to keep going back to the positives here, because I'll tell you what, Brentford put a shift in there. They worked together, they worked for each other, and they was working for us as well.
Two things I'm a bit annoyed with. One, we conceded another late goal again. And two, you know, Collins had that chance in the second half which he should have put away. But look, I think I'm really proud after that. That's a performance to be proud of. Everybody played their part, and we thoroughly deserve to get something out of the game.
It's a narrow defeat and a late one at that. So we've got to take heart from that. The downside is the goals we gave away again. Pretty much unchallenged, unmarked headers again. So maybe we try and sort that out, hopefully. But overall, great performance. Really showed a lot of heart, organisation, and yeah, a restricted team on form like that. one goal defeat or one goal win for them. Pretty good.
You expect to turn over a team like Brentford. Obviously, they're a better
teams quality. Teams like Brentford, yeah.
Yeah, teams like Brentford. But they're a better quality side than what we have been playing as of recent. But, yeah, I don't know. Something wasn't clicking today, in my opinion. It just wasn't as, I guess, liquid as what we've seen in the past couple of weeks. You guys did put up a fight. But, you know, when we went 1-1, I think the fight sort of left you boys a little bit, to be honest. Like, a lot of time wasted. I think you guys would have been happy with a draw. Would you have taken that?
Are we happy with a draw? Yeah, we're delighted with a draw.
Of course, yeah, absolutely. Like, you guys are, well, like, fighting at the bottom of the table, but still, like, every point is worth it for you guys. So I understand it. You played well. You surprised me. And I think you surprised a lot of fans, a lot of players. I think you surprised a lot of the players as well.
Brentford defended well. I know they had a few players missing, but you defended well. The tactics that I saw Brentford, you know, falling down on the floor, every opportunity, you know, that sort of worked.
But the referee was on your side, you know what I'm saying?
To be honest, standing in the stands, we were saying the referee is on Brentford's side.
Mate, as I was saying, them glasses, that you need to take off them tinted, those red tinted glasses of yours.
All in all, I was worried that, you know, it was either going to be a draw or Brentford nick one of those goals, like the winning goal. We managed to nick the winning goal. You know, I'm just happy for the 3 points.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
There you go. The fans after the game. I mean, you've got to laugh. I mean, as I said something, it's actually a good laugh. I mean, our day started very early. We went to some sort of kind of werewolf brewery, which has all sorts of kind of monsters in it up in Camden. So we started off, like, you know, literally not 11 o'clock in Camden. We started for a 5:30 kickoff, which is great. Ended up in another brewery. And then after the game, we ended up in this little kind of little bottle shop as well with us and the Arsenal fans. And ended up having some really good conversations with the Arsenal fans, which you may pick up some of it on the little clips that we've had here now. But also definitely check out prideofwest.london and check out the post-match Arsenal podcast, because it is hilarious. I mean, it was the fact that we lost, that we did a 30-minute podcast, kind of goes to show you that there was stuff to talk about, and including the Arsenal fans. There's lots of teams like Brentford going on. They admitted that Guy Havertz should have been sent off as well. It was really interesting, so definitely check that out. Good laugh, wasn't it, lady?
Yeah, it was a really, really good day out. Nice sunny day. We met in Camden, didn't we? And, you know, Lou sorted us out that werewolf pub where there was like ghost train carriages out in the beer garden, and kind of all kinds of horror show weirdness in there. It was if you're up in Camden area and you fancy like a quirky couple of pints, then yeah, it's a brilliant little brewery to check out. And nice to be up in London where the sun was out. The Hummerson Brewery after that was excellent. You tucked into a bit of West Indian food, and then on to the walk to the Emirates past Pentonville and stuff. So a really good day out. And as you said, the bottle shop afterwards was really friendly. And I like the fact that people tip their heads to us. You know, that we're not seen, I don't think, as fodder. Obviously, other people don't really fully understand the injury crisis. They just think you're not as good as you were last season. And there's that kind of like, oh, third season syndrome-y kind of thing. But we all know, or anyone with, you know, anyone with half a brain can see that, you know, there are circumstances that have more than kind of contributed to why we're not anywhere near where we were last year. So it was, you know, I got home and
went to bed.
Well, were we first on Match of the Day? No, I watched Match of the Day on the train. That was it. Yeah. It was a long day, good day. I think we probably would have been delighted with a point. I think we deserved a point, Bill.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Players of the match as well, done by the Tasmanian Bee, who's coming over in a few weeks' time as well with the whole family over from Tasmania. We've got Wiesa at number one, Yenelt number two, and Aya number three. And Wiesa, he's been making a bit of a difference in that side, don't you think, Laney?
Yeah, he has. He's come back from African Cup of Nations, and he looks really fit and fast. So maybe that's helped him. He played a lot of 90 minutes out there rather than coming off the bench. I think that definitely helped him. As I said, you know, slightly earlier, that's the speed, the acceleration that he put in to chase down Ramsdale on the slide. That wasn't coincidence. He anticipated that. But yeah, you're right. He's, you know, to get man of the match for in the Brentford shirt that game, I think it was fully deserved. He's looking, you know, scoring really regularly, you know, so he's contributing a huge lot. I wish the goals were leading to a few more points, but let's hope that he's on sort of target again tomorrow. And, you know, we have to play for 90 minutes tomorrow. And even if we go behind, we have to have belief that we're going to create enough to get, you know, get a point or a win out of that. So there's enough about us still, as I keep saying, and Wiesa's been a part of that.
That's right. So listen, let's go up to JB with his facts and his funk, because, you know, when JB's in the house, it makes you relax, because he's got plenty of facts and plenty of funk.
Hello, Jonathan Burchell back again. Saturday was the first time Arsenal have completed the league double over us in our 8 top tier seasons. Previously, we'd done that over them in 1937-38. We did at least score in the first half, something we hadn't done on our 6 previous league visits. In fact, it was the quickest league goal we scored at Arsenal since Jack Holliday's 33rd minute goal in our first top tier visit there in 1936. With Arsenal recently scoring for fun, some are predicting serious damage to our goal difference. It is now 17 years since our last record-equalling worst league defeat, 7-0 at Peterborough. Christian Norgaard went off in the 34th minute, the earliest we've made a substitution this season. The only other two we've made in the first half have been in the 40th minute at Brighton, when Brian Mbeumo went off, and in the 42nd minute at Newcastle, when Rico Henry was subbed. Neither player has played since. Yohan Wiesa scored for the third league game running, something he's not previously done. It takes Mika with Brian Mbeumo as our top scorer of the season so far. It also equals the 7 Premier League goals he scored in each of the last 2 seasons. Last Saturday was the 65th anniversary of Brentford's 6-0 away win at Southampton in 1959 in the third tier. In that game, our all-time top goalscorer, Jim Towers, became the 13th and the last to score 4 goals in a league game for us. This season, we've only had one player to score a brace. That was Brian, back in game 2 at Fulham.
There you go, JB with his facts and his funk. And just coming back to the Arsenal game, just talking stats and tactical business, we've got Bees Breakdown, the Gowler. He's going to give us the tactical and statistical lowdown on that Arsenal game. Also, he's going to look forward to the Burnley match.
Hey, this is Jacob Gowler with Bees Breakdown. So for that Arsenal review, Arsenal controlled 72% possession and they won the XG battle. Although not by much, Arsenal only had 1.28 XG to Brentford's 0.97 XG. But I thought that the Gunners threatened on corner kicks. They racked up 10 corners throughout the match, but the Bees did well defending that. Unfortunately, I feel like Brentford are still missing the threat of pace up front, and that's what prevents big six sides from being as aggressive when in possession, especially with Arsenal shifting into that 2-3-5 formation at times against Brentford's low block. But I thought that Brentford's high press did a great job. They forced Ramsdale into that error, and then, you know, Wiese's goal from that. And then the Beasts also created chances from set plays. They even used the threat of long throws to get Collins that free header and a big XG chance. All right, so for that Burnley preview, they're currently 19th in the league coming off a draw against West Ham. They've allowed about 12 more goals than their underlying numbers suggest, and they've created the second lowest XG so far this season. So they're a very direct side. They've launched about 77% of their goal kicks, and they have one of the highest percentages of long passes, but a very low completion percentage. And they also have the worst aerial duel win percentage, which doesn't really help direct style of play at all. And they have the second longest average shot distance and one of the worst shots on target percentages, which is just an indicator that they're settling for low chance shots and not really getting those high percentage chances. And then on the other end, it's completely flipped. So their defense is allowing teams very close shots and high percentages of shots on target. And so the last time out against Burnley, the Bees used their high press to trouble Trafford and win back possession in Burnley's half. And then in possession, the Bees used overloads on the wings and then big switches of play to progress the ball and attack the space in behind. So I think we'll see a similar setup this weekend.
So there you go, the Gowler Bees breakdown on that Arsenal game. Interesting as well, but also more interesting for me is Burnley. Burnley, we're playing Burnley, and listen, Burnley under Dyche terrified me because we just never beat them, except for the one time we beat them 2-0 at our ground as well, which was great. But other than that, we struggled to beat Burnley and any Dyche team. This is different with Company. The question of asking, I was on Monday Night Club as well on our last Monday. We might put the clip up of that as well, where they asked me sort of like, when we play teams like Burnley, is it different to playing teams like Arsenal, where Brentford, you know, that our application? And that's, I mean, I thought that's quite a good question, because, you know, can we do the same thing against Burnley, against teams like Burnley, like we do against Arsenal? Question, Laney.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You know, it's... I think we know. I let's look at it on two levels. You know, the game itself. How's the game itself going to pan out? You know, Burnley will see us as a real genuine chance to get some points. They're really confident. This is if they're actually gonna make some kind of attempt to survive, which is really unlikely. But that, they must know that. But they look at this as a game where there is 3 points potentially for them to get. And if we approach this in the wrong way, then that's really likely to happen. So they're no mugs. They were, you know, 2-0 up during the week. And, you know, they got pegged back again. So they're not awful. They're just not strong enough. They're not Premier League strong enough at the moment. And, you know, if they go down, there's a good chance they'll come back up again, and there'll be that yo-yo, and they'll, you know, they might be next time round. But Vincent Kompany is a hugely intelligent guy, and he's really calm, and he's been calm all season, and he's been measured, and he's you know, they'll be looking at this like they've got a really good chance of winning. Now, what's likely to happen is that, under normal circumstances, we'd be pretty much just too strong for them, and we'd probably, you know, almost certainly get a point. If not, it's a guaranteed win. But I'm looking at it going, yeah. That's why I'm quite excited about the game. I think this is a clincher. If we go there and get a win, I think we're safe. I'm going there confident, if I'm honest. I think, you know, with Ivan and with Wiese there, and there's a Thomas Frank talked about like having a decision to make on about Brian Mbeumo. Whether that will happen tomorrow, hopefully he'll be on the bench. That will be for us to expect him to come straight into the starting 11. I'm not quite sure that'll happen, but you never know. If they've seen enough about him, if he's strong enough, they think he's rigid enough. He's not too fragile. Then they'll play him for the 90 and bring him off perhaps. But it's a game that we just have to approach mentally correct, and we have to hope that our defence can stand firm. You know, I hear what you say about a company team versus a Daesh team in Burnley, and you know the bombardment we probably would have got under a Daesh team, which we're going to get at Everton away, fills me with a little bit more dread. But tomorrow we stand a good chance of coming away with what we need.
And again, the reason why we say that is that this company, you know, especially in the Championship, like to play football. So it's almost like playing us at our own game, the game that we like to play. We're talking about Burnley, but it's better to go over to Burnley to find out exactly what their fans think. Let's go over to Tom from No Nay Never podcast. He's going to give us the lowdown on Burnley.
Good evening. This is Tom, a Burnley fan from the No Nay Never podcast. You can get us on all the usual places, iTunes, however the kids listen to their podcast these days, Spotify. We're at Noon and Ever on Twitter if you've got any questions or queries. Here to talk about the Burnley v Brentford game on Saturday. As you can probably hear in my voice, it's with a sense of trepidation we approach these fixtures these days. They feel like a bit of a chore. I'm sure, not to denigrate the great Brentford Football Club, but you're the same kind of club to us as you'll have brilliant seasons, you'll always remember them, and you'll have seasons where you just think, why am I still bothering going? What is the point? The kind of seasons that 10 years down the line you wear as a badge of honour, and this is one of those seasons for us. It's a bit of a chore. We're not competitive in the majority of games that we play. We're losing most weeks. We haven't won a game yet this calendar year. Just before Christmas was our last win in West London, as it happens, against your friends at Fulham. And it doesn't fill you with confidence for the games going forward. We got a good draw last time at West Ham. They're not a bad side. It's a good time to play them, probably in between Europa League ties, but we let a two-goal lead slip 2-0 at half-time when we made a draw. So even a positive result where we didn't lose felt like a bit of a kick in the teeth. But all that being said, move on. The great thing about football is however bad you were last week, there's always next week. So we'll see how we get on Saturday. As I've mentioned already, it's not been a great season for us. A lot of people wouldn't have expected it to be so bad. I think the expectation from ourselves as a fan base coming up with over 100 points, and when we go down, and we will go down, we'll be the first team who's gone down having been promoted with over 100 points. Every other team who's done 100 plus has stayed up in their first season up. Whether that says more about the strength of the Premier League these days, I know obviously last season all three promoted teams stayed up, and this season probably quite likely, I think, especially with the leading result against Bournemouth, that all three will go down. So perhaps we can point to the relative strength of the leagues and say, well, we just got up at the wrong time or went down at the wrong time. But you know, it didn't have to be this way. The major problem that we've had is we've tried to change too much too soon, I think. So obviously prior to the season just gone, we were known as a sort of long ball, direct, dinosaur, quote unquote, team. It was always a bit of a caricature. We were certainly the fairest team in the league. We're a very disciplined side. We didn't go around kicking people. At times we could play some good stuff, at times we didn't play some good stuff. We tended to not play the best stuff against teams whose budgets were 10 times the size of ours, and it did tend to keep us in good stead by and large. That obviously ran out at the end of that season. Sean Dyche was sacked, and the brave new era of Vincent Kompany was ushered in for the Championship. And you know, nobody could have had any complaints about how it went last year. 16 new players, the squad was completely overhauled, but still retaining a bit of a spine, a bit of a Dyche spine. we had the best of both worlds in that sense. We had a fantastic season, only lost three games. We clinched the championship title at home with Blackburn Rovers, our big rivals, which was the kind of achievement that you sing songs about, and we do, and I'm sure we'll continue to for many years. So coming into the season, there were no black marks against Vincent Kompany's name. Everybody was very happy. Everybody was, well, some people were more confident than others. I would have said, we'll stay up, but it might be a bit of a slog. Others thought we'd get into Europe, but we've not been anything close to that. I think probably the biggest issue has been the transfer window. So we spent £100 million, which is far and above anything that we've ever spent in one window before, give or take with clauses. But we've spent it on the wrong player. So the profile that we've gone for is young players from Europe, not a lot of Premier League experience, but we've gone fishing in the markets where, you know, you can pick up some hidden gems for probably cheaper than you could in some of the bigger leagues. And the idea is probably to sell them on in a couple of years for a lot more than you bought them for. Now, I'm speaking to obviously Brentford fans. You'll know a lot about this kind of model. You've had a lot of players that you bought for peanuts that you sold for a lot of money. Some of them you sold to us. And obviously, you know a lot about the smaller markets as well. And obviously, you've got the Danish connections, that kind of thing. We don't have those kind of connections. So we're basically entirely reliant on what Vincent Kompany can conjure up. We don't have a sporting director. We don't have really anybody on the non-playing side that has any kind of football nous or track record. So we're relying on Vincent Kompany, and that worked very well for us in the Championship, but it's not worked well for us at all this season. We've got a few young lads from Belgium that haven't impressed. We've got a few young lads from the Premier League that haven't impressed. The only kind of player that we signed with any kind of experience of the Premier League is Nathan Redmond. He's barely kicked the ball in anger, and he's now out for the season. So we're left with kind of a lot of young lads who've got a lot of talent. I'm sure a lot of them will go on to have good careers, but you can't put 11 of them together and expect to win Premier League games. And that's how it's gone for us, really. If you ask the majority of Burnley fans, they would say, we had a brilliant season last season, we've had a terrible season this season. That bounces out, so let's give Kompany a bit of time and see how next season goes in the Championship. I'm thinking it will be more difficult to get out of the Championship in the future, and I personally would have rolled the dice a bit earlier and seen if we could have got someone else in who could have kept us up. But that has gone now. It's tough to watch at the minute, but all the noises out of the club are that we're going to stick with Vincent, we're going to see how next season goes. And to be fair to him, his track record in the Championship is fantastic, and we were fantastic last season, so let's hope that proves the case again. What we did have last season was a spine that we're going to struggle to recreate next season with the kind of profile of signings he makes. We still had Ashley Barnes, Josh Brownhill, Jack Cork, Charlie Taylor playing last season. This season Taylor has been out at left back. He played at centre half a lot last season. We don't really have any Dyche centre halves left anymore. Obviously Nathan Collins left to go to you guys, Ben Mee left to go to you guys. I think very highly of Ben Mee still after his handball in the game that relegated us. I think a bit less of Nathan Collins, but I won't dwell on that too much here. But as you will no doubt be aware, they're very fine players and very competent Premier League centre halves, and we haven't really replaced that kind of level of Premier League ability. In midfield, Jack Cork, who was kind of the spine of the team for the last few years, I think it's probably fair to say that he is a bit old now to be a starting Premier League midfielder every year, but again, we've not really done enough to replace his nous in the middle. Josh Brownhill has played a few years in the Premier League under Dyche, but I don't think he's got the ability to be a Premier League footballer. And Ashley Barnes has gone as well up front. He is one of those players that you love if he's playing for you and you hate him if he's not. A very unorthodox player is the word that I used to describe him. And I really did not think we'd ever miss him, but we undoubtedly are. We haven't got that kind of physicality presence up top. We've got some good players in there, but they come in and out and they just don't have that je ne sais quoi that Ashley brought. And what worries me next season is a squad that is entirely of Vincent Kompany's making, without that little bit of dash stardust just sprinkled along it that really made it such an easy win in the Championship last season. But we shall see. We're all hoping that lessons have been learned from the transfer business from what we've done this year, and we're hoping that that next season we can have fun again in the Championship and hopefully come up again and make a better fist of it next time. Moving on to Brentford. Well, I was at the game at whatever you call your new stadium. It's not Griffin Park, obviously. I presume it's got some dreadful sponsor name, but I don't know what that is, so I'll call it the Brentford Stadium. I've got a good friend who's a Brentford fan. He told me before the game that you've got a lot of injuries. I believe you still have a lot of injuries, and there's going to be no Waymo, no Benmi on Saturday. And he said that he'd be more than happy with a draw. I'd have certainly been more than happy with a draw. As it transpired, we were dreadful. You were very good. If that's the only game you've seen is in the season, that is probably as bad as we've been. We're not a good side at all, but we haven't been any worse than we were at your place. You won 3-0. You had a goal disallowed. I've still no idea why that goal was disallowed. You know, we all like to complain about VAR when it goes against our teams, but when it gives you a gift like that, you do have to hold your hands up and say it's not always biased against us. That was a situation where it wasn't, but we're not good enough to take advantage, and you rattled in a few goals after that. I try not to relive that game too much. It was a low point in a season of a lot of low points. But as I say, as bad as we played in the league all year, I would say, and however bad we are on Saturday, I don't think we'll be that bad. I am worried how much Neil Mopay causes problems in that game. I think he's a very limited player. The impression that I get is, as much as you like him, he's kind of your Ashley Barnes. He's a bit unorthodox. He's a bit of a S-house. He likes winding up defenders, but ultimately he's not really got that much quality. Whereas Ivan Toney, as we know, is a player with a lot of quality. I did watch I haven't watched that much Brentford this season. I'll hold my hands up. It's been quite depressing watching the Premier League in general for me this season. But I did watch your game where the Messiah was resurrected against Nottingham Forest. He scored, obviously, that free kick. I'm not looking forward to our centre-halves playing against him. I think he's got a bit of everything. But it's the physicality of the nous. He's going to bully those centre-halves. Whoever we play, all our centre-halves are basically the same person. And I think he'd bully and threaten whoever we've got at that in that position. So if you're looking for a player who's going to be the difference in this game, I think it will be Toney. And if I was a Brentford fan, I'd be thinking this is a fantastic opportunity to get 3 points. We've only played three games at the Turf this season that we haven't lost. There was a winning at Sheffield United. We got a draw against Luton and a draw against Fulham. So anyone who's kind of come with any sort of intent hasn't had a problem in getting the 3 points. I imagine that's going to be the same for yourselves, if I'm honest. I'd like to think that now the pressure's off a little bit. I think realistically everyone's aware that we're going to get relegated. You know, at that point sometimes teams play with a little bit more freedom, don't they? The pressure's off a little bit. We have played better in the last two games. We lost 2-0 into Bournemouth, and I think a lot was made of how well we played in that game. Considering how bad Bournemouth are, you shouldn't be losing to them really, however well or badly you play. And then obviously we've got the point at West Ham, so we're not coming into this at the lowest point, but we're still not a good side. And if I was you, if you come away from the game with anything less than 3 points, I'd be sorely disappointed. I don't think it's going to have a bearing on the ultimate outcome of your season. I think you'll stay up whatever happens, whether you win, whether you lose, whether you draw. You'll stay up. Three worst teams in Brentford for sure. And obviously Burnley and Sheffield United, the two of them. So I wouldn't be too downhearted if you don't win, but I would really expect to. I think we'll get a goal. I think if you're a betting man, I would say both teams to score on Brentford would be a good bet in this game. I'm looking forward to it. I like Brentford, good club. I like playing the sort of teams who haven't disappeared up their own backside in this league. There's still a few of them left, and Brentford are they're a proper club. And when I started going to football, we were in the same division as Brentford in the third tier, and that's the kind of football I like. You know, there's a lot that I won't miss about not being in the Premier League next season. VAR certainly being one of them, and playing these kind of teams, you just expect you to roll up, roll over and lie down and die for them, and kick up an almighty stink if you don't. But Brentford aren't one of these clubs, so I wish you all the best. I think the more clubs like Brentford and Burnley there are in the Premier League, the better. I hope it's a good season for you after, of course, Saturday. I'm sure you'll have a good day on Saturday as well. Safe trip to you all. Yes, safe trip up to the turf. Good luck for the rest of the season. And yes, all the very best. Up the Clarets.
So there you go, Tom from No Nay Never podcast. I know that's like for them a bit down. This season for them has been a bit rubbish, to be quite honest with you, especially if you saw the heights that they were at last season. But then on the plus side of it as well, you know, it looks like they may be in a bit of trouble, but the fact is that they go down to the Championship again, and they're going to be one of the strongest sides in the Championship again, and they'll be able to build themselves and then come back up and probably come up stronger. And that's presuming that they do go down, because we're not saying that 100%. Burnley match, Lainey, we've talked about it. I know we've talked about the potential of Mbeumo. Norgaard being out is a little bit of a gutter, but we're probably used to sort of kind of having so many players out, we just have to deal with it. You're very confident of a result. Give me a score prediction.
Well, I'm not overly confident. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw.
Okay, Lady's going for a 1-1 draw. I'd be very happy with the draw, but I think I'm going to go and pip you, actually, Lady. And I'm going to go for a 2-1 win. The fact that we score goals, but we can't seem to keep a clean sheet, I think that will do me very nicely indeed. So, this is the Besotted Pride of West London podcast. Don't forget to buy us a beer, besotted.com/beer. Don't forget to also write a review and review us on all good podcast channels. Just check us out on all good podcast channels as well. There'll be a post-match podcast after the game at Burnley on Saturday, so check that out on prideofwest.london. But other than that, thank you very much for listening. We've got Lainey in the place.
Good afternoon.
Got Billy the Bee in the house here. Thank you very much. And everybody. And everybody, enjoy yourselves, enjoy your week, and let's hope that we go and do Burnley as we say. Come on.
Come on, you bees.
You bees. You bees.
So your catchphrase. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.